done to her. A man just took her photo to Vatican because he wrote to me, I'm going there, I'm going to take her photo with me. People are working for Fatah.
Sepi Defarsi, award-winning Iranian filmmaker, director of the new documentary, Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. It's going to be premiering here in New York at Doc NYC at Village East Thursday at 12:45. But it's also in theaters around the country.
Right now, also
at IFC. Democracy Now!, the film about it, Steal the Story, Please, will be shown at two theaters here in New York, at the SVA Theater and at IFC Thursday and Friday. On Saturday, I'll be speaking twice in Amsterdam in the Netherlands at the Royal Theater Carré. The film will show there at 5:15 and 8:30 on Saturday night. Hope to see people in Amsterdam. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Check our website at democracynow.org.
This is KBOO Portland.
Tune in this Monday at 11 p.m. as the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time, presents By the Dawn's Early Light by Lawrence Block.
This is a case that shouldn't be in the first place, and I'd love to clear it up before they even go so far as presenting a bill to the grand jury.
So for me, you want?
Whatever you can find, Matt. I don't know what there is to be found. But you were a cop, and now you're a private. You can get down on the streets and nose around.
Tune in this Monday at 11 p.m. Gremlin Time's 3D radio players present an adaptation of Lawrence Block's short story By the Dawn's Early Light, right here on Community Radio KBOO Portland.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcast, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portlanders voice their opposition to redirecting funds away from homeless camp sweeps.
Newport braces for a possible ICE facility.
And today was the last day the U.S. minted its smallest coin, the penny.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 12, 2025. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. Portland City Council is hearing multiple hours of testimony on its fall budget adjustment. Councilor Angelita Murillo introduced an amendment that would redirect funds away from homeless sweeps towards housing, food assistance, and refugee support. It's part of the fall technical adjustment ordinance process used to tweak the budget around this time every year. In June, councilors passed a budget that allocated over $16 million to a program that sweeps homeless Portlanders. Murillo's amendment would take just over a quarter of that money, $4.3 million, and reallocate it. Homeless advocates have been critical of sweeps, which have ramped up under Mayor Keith Wilson. Wilson started enforcing Portland's camping ban last week. 7 people got tickets, and 40 were arrested for reasons other than violating the camping ban. Mayor Wilson sent an email to constituents asking them to come testify against Murillo's amendment. Testifiers overwhelmingly oppose it. They highlight that trash collection and cleanup is critical, and they fear the amendment would strip funding from that program. The text of the amendment clarifies that the reallocation of funds would not include general cleanup, sanitation work, or other social services. It reads, quote, "The intent of this amendment is to, within the bounds of legal obligations, reduce the budget campsite clearance activities that result in displacement of people, and to preserve resources for directly helping our unhoused neighbors live with dignity." End quote.
The city of Newport on the Central Oregon coast could be the site of a new ICE facility. State Representative David Gomberg said, quote, "There are persistent rumors and reports that ICE is in the process of expanding their operations near the Newport Municipal Airport." Gomberg explained, quote, "Predictably, the federal agencies that actually know something are not saying." When asked about why ICE might have found Newport an attractive location, Gomberg noted, "The city's airport is remote, unlike Portland's ICE outpost." State Representative Gomberg said, quote, "Every day we have been receiving more credible evidence that the federal government is pushing to site an immigration detention facility in our community. And disturbingly, we are receiving no communications or confirmation from the federal government as to what they are planning. They are operating in the shadows and trying to fast-track this project with zero transparency or public engagement," end quote. Gomberg went on to say, the city of Newport received a letter of intent from the Team Housing Solutions, a federal contractor, to lease a 4.3-acre airport property near the U.S. Coast Guard station to, quote, "support operations of an unspecified federal project that they intend to be operational by December 1st, end quote. Newport City officials say they're actively working with local, state, and federal legislators to verify and assess the potential effects on public safety and on city resources. Previously, the U.S. Coast Guard had operated a rescue helicopter out of Newport for nearly 40 years. Despite a fierce public outcry regarding past attempts to move the helicopter base, city officials learned the Coast Guard in late October moved the rescue helicopter to North Bend. That's more than 100 miles south of their fishing fleet. U.S. Representative Val Hoyle believes the move put local fishermen's lives in danger as the crabbing season rapidly approaches. While Hoyle said she had not confirmed the move was made to make room for an ICE operation, she said that was her suspicion. Oregon is one of the only a few states where ICE does not have a detention facility. The agency usually sends detainees from the Portland area to a massive detention center in Tacoma, Washington.
A proposed ballot initiative backed by the Portland Police Association wants to fund the hiring of 400 new police officers by using 25% of the revenues of the Portland Clean Energy Fund tax. The Portland Clean Energy Fund tax is a 1% sales tax on large retailers operating in Portland. Revenues generated by the tax are budgeted for job creation for people of color and to build local infrastructure that can withstand the effects of climate change. When Portland brought in larger-than-expected revenues for 5 years in a row, the former city council opted last year to raid the fund and reroute some of the excess revenue to climate-related city projects. The surplus funds helped to backfill shortages in bureaus loosely connected to the goals of the Portland Clean Energy Fund, a move that came with criticism from nonprofit groups that supported the passage of the fund. Portland currently employs around 800 officers, or 1.2 officers per 1,000 residents, half the national average of 2.4 officers per 1,000 residents. To place the initiative on the November 2026 ballot, backers will need to gather 40,437 signatures, or 9% of the total number of registered voters within the city limits of Portland.
The state of Oregon is included in a proactive nationwide recall of organic baby food. The product in question is ByHeart Whole Nutrition infant formula cans and the company's Anywhere Pack. At least 15 babies in 12 states have been hospitalized in the outbreak, with more cases pending, local officials say. No deaths have been reported. The USDA is investigating 84 cases of infant botulism detected since August. Of those, 36 consumed infant formula, with more than a third who received ByHeart formula. Clostridium botulinum spores, or botulism, have not been found in any unopened ByHeart product, but the company is pulling its product just the same. ByHeart products formula powder at a plant in Allerton, Iowa, then ships it to a site in Portland, Oregon for canning and distribution. USDA inspectors were at the Portland plant on Monday. Infant botulism is a rare and serious illness that occurs in babies under age of one whose gut microbes are immature. It is caused when babies consume bacteria that contain spores that produce a toxin in the gut. Symptoms include constipation, poor feeding, drooping eyelid, weak muscle tone, and difficulty swallowing and breathing problems, among others. Infants who develop these symptoms need immediate medical attention. The treatment for the infection is Baby Big, an IV medication made from blood plasma of people immunized against botulism. Today was the last day for production of the U.S. penny. The U.S. Mint in Philadelphia struck its last circulating penny because that coin has been canceled. It seems the cost of making them exceed their actual value. The U.S. Mint had been making pennies since 1793, a year after Congress passed the Coinage Act. There are billions of pennies in circulation, however. It's rarely used in financial transactions given our modern economy and the onset of the digital age. Donald Trump ordered production to cease when that cost rose to nearly 4 cents per penny, four times more than they are actually worth. Trump wrote in an online post, quote, "This is so wasteful," end quote. People love their pennies, though. Many think they are lucky or fun to collect. Retailers have voiced concerns in recent weeks as supplies ran low. Some have said the phase-out was abrupt and came with no guidance from the federal government on how to handle customer transactions. In fact, it is fairly common to round prices down to avoid shortchanging customers. Some retailers have asked purchasers to use exact change. Some banks have begun rationing supplies despite a previous penny glut. Over the last century, about half the coins made at U.S. Mints in Philadelphia and Denver have been pennies. Some, but not all of our coins, do better. The dime costs less than 6 cents to produce, and the quarter under 15 cents. But the nickel may also be in trouble. That 5-cent piece actually costs about 14 cents to make. The Treasury Department expects to save $56 million per year on materials by ceasing to make pennies. Lawmakers race to end the longest shutdown in history as food aid and safety net sources hang in the balance. Utah's redistricting ruling reshapes that state's congressional maps. And the U.S. expands its naval presence in Latin America. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
SNAP and Medi-Cal have kept them from falling into poverty. The Head Start programs that allow them to go to work and not have to worry about that coming out of their paycheck.
California Head Start teacher Tammy Lewis says the shutdown on top of deep safety net cuts caused immediate everyday problems for the low-income families they work with. The House is back in session to vote on the spending deal. The Senate passed, and Speaker Mike Johnson says he expects it to pass. It would reopen the government through January 30, but leave another standoff early next year possible and does not restore health care or nutrition funding slashed this summer. President Donald Trump says he plans to sign the bill, calling it a reopening of our country. Oregon Republican Congressman Cliff Bentz is defending his party's role in the shutdown.
The situation we are in is because the Democrats chose to close down the government. And that meant the SNAP program, which is essential for many, many people, was stuck. The administration was trying to scrounge up the money to try to keep it going.
The deal funds the Department of Agriculture, including SNAP food aid, but it's still unclear when recipients will see their benefits restored. It includes the promise but no details on a vote next month to extend expiring subsidies to keep ACA insurance premiums from spiking. And Heather Grenier with Montana Poverty Action nonprofit HRDC says the standoff has stalled heating aid for 15,000 people in the state, with intense cold weather already underway in the mountains.
We're looking at probably January, February before those benefits are there. And so people will be well into the heating season by that time and potentially behind on their heating bills already.
Grenier says those families could already be choosing between medicine, food, and heating. To the south in Utah, a major court ruling could reshape congressional maps before the midterms. Catherine Beal with the Utah League of Women Voters says the judge's decision to overturn the legislature's map restores a level of fairness. She says it keeps more liberal Salt Lake City intact instead of diluting it by splitting it among four more Republican districts.
Made a difference for the voters. It just gives every single voter a voice, and it sends a message to the legislature that they have to represent their constituents, not just the ones they choose, every single one of them.
Partisan efforts to redistrict in Kansas, Indiana, and Maryland are running into resistance from legislators, some of whom call it an unwise power grab. Some resistant Republicans report getting pressure from the White House. And the U.S. has deployed the Gerald Ford Aircraft Carrier Group to the Western Atlantic as part of a growing naval presence near Venezuela. Critics note the ships are not suited for countering narcotics trafficking cartels who use small vessels. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jake Thomas from Street Roots about his latest story on Portland's renewed enforcement of its camping ban. At 6, it's Flashpoints. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with an overnight low of 48 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy, with a high of 59. Today in history, in 1970, the Oregon Highway Division attempts to destroy a rotting beach sperm whale in Florence with explosives, leading to the now infamous exploding whale incident. It threw huge chunks of sea mammal flesh 800 feet away, and the smell lingered for some time. The quote of the day is from American novelist Ira Levin, who died this day in 2007. Levin said through perhaps his most famous work, Rosemary's Baby, "This is no dream. This is happening."
Current rules that outline how water from the Colorado River is to be shared by 40 million residential, commercial, and irrigation customers in the West will soon expire. 7 Western states had until Tuesday to negotiate those new guidelines. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Current rules defining how the Colorado River is to be shared by 40 million residents in the West will soon expire. The 7 basin states had until Tuesday to negotiate those new guidelines. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, no deal was struck.
States still cannot come to terms, leaving tribes lost in the shuffle. Daniel Cordalis is Navajo and runs the Native American Rights Fund's Tribal Water Institute. He believes the Bureau of Reclamation's deadline is arbitrary.
If it means anything, maybe the federal government's going to step in and start throwing some weight around.
When no reclamation nominee has been tapped to replace Trump's old pick, Ted Cook, beyond the bickering upper and lower basin states, there's 30 federally recognized tribes stuck in the middle of a decades-old debate on how best to divvy the water while keeping the ever-dwindling river flowing.
They have to try to come up with ideas that are doable and that will benefit the entire system, not just tribes. And I hope that none of that is compromised by this deadline coming and going.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Alaska Federation of Natives President Ben Mallah and about 100 other tribal leaders were in Washington, D.C. last week and had a brief visit with Vice President J.D. Vance on Friday. Mallah said it was a good step forward to be invited and is looking forward to more engagement next year. Vance gave a brief presentation on the potential for economic development in Indian country, including manufacturing. Principal Chief of the Cherokee Nation, Chuck Hoskin Jr., said it was good to hear the vice president focus on things that could be done in Indian country. Months before a storm devastated parts of western Alaska, a federal agency canceled a grant that would have helped protect one of the communities from flooding. Ayolna Niden with the Alaska Desk has more on what that money could have done for the village of Kipnuk and what lies ahead for the community.
Raina Paul is the environmental director for the village of Kipnuk. Her house was one of many that was swept upriver during the historic storm last month.
We were so not ready. We were so not prepared.
Paul says the community now needs time to heal and rebuild. The remnants of Typhoon Halon devastated about a dozen villages. Months before the storm, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency canceled a $20 million grant that would have helped Kipnuk protect infrastructure from flooding. Paul says Kipnuk has been losing more than 10 feet of riverbank each year.
We're facing erosion. The sea level is rising. The permafrost is melting.
Paul spent months applying for funding through the EPA's Community Change Grants Program. But the Trump administration terminated the program in May in a broader effort to roll back environmental justice funding. The decision is at the heart of the lawsuit that Kipnuk signed on to in August. The court denied a motion to block the program's termination. The plaintiffs appealed that decision, Cheryl Musgrove is with the Alaska Institute for Justice.
This was a chance for the federal government to finally show that they cared and that they were willing to invest in this small community in remote Alaska.
EPA Press Secretary Bridget Hirsch said that the funding would not have prevented destruction in the community. Hirsch said that, quote, while partisans on the left would apparently prefer to have seen those precious tax dollars washed away, EPA now has the resources available to ensure the money is spent appropriately and wisely, end quote. Musgrove says the first year of the grant was meant for planning, and the construction would have not begun by the time of the storm. She says that the first phase would have also included hazardous waste removal.
Now that's in the river in the Bering Sea.
Musgrove says she hopes that the devastation of the storm highlights the needs of the villages like Kipnuk and helps them mobilize resources for finding long-term solutions. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naiden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Long-standing tensions between Hindu-led India and Muslim-led Pakistan are heightening again. On Monday, a car bomb in the Indian capital of New Delhi killed 10 people and injured 18. Less than 24 hours later, a suicide bomber in the Pakistani capital of Islamabad killed 12 and injured 27. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi did not blame any group for the bombing, but vowed to bring all those responsible to justice. Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, without providing evidence, accused Indian terrorist proxies for the Islamabad attack, claiming it was backed by India from Afghan soil. Last month, Pakistan attacked two cities in neighboring Afghanistan, including the capital, Kabul. Tensions between Pakistan and Afghanistan have increased since the Taliban took control there. Prime Minister Modi vowed to bring, quote, all those responsible to justice, end quote. Modi has built his brand on a muscular national security policy, casting himself as the nation's watchman, and opposition politicians immediately seized on the alleged security lapse. Pakistan now faces a recent surge in militant violence and has done so since the Taliban seized power in Kabul in 2021, fueling cross-border tensions that recently erupted into the worst clashes the two countries have seen in years. Recent talks in Qatar and Istanbul aimed at ending the latest cross-border fighting have made little progress.
Now we go to Global Citizen commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. He says the American people, as well as the small and large business community, are not fooled by Trump's economic program. Unpopularity of tariffs, the government shutdown, and Trump's leadership are among the signs. People are suffering, and Trump doesn't seem to notice or care. The opinion expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Everyone, President Trump this week insisted Americans are experiencing the best economy we've ever had, Politico reported on September 13. Just this week, Trump stood by that view, claiming that his administration is providing consumers with affordability, the latest barometer of economic conditions. Only deliberate blindness can account for that claim, as the rebuke of Trump's economics in the November 4 elections makes clear. Food and most other prices are rising, consumer confidence and jobs are declining, and they're all bad news for the middle and lower income classes. You can't talk the figures up or down, as Trump once tried to do with Bureau of Labor Statistics. Nor can you fire people and expect the jobs figures to improve by putting a loyalist in their place, as Trump has done, or rebrand an unpopular big beautiful tax bill as the working family's tax cut. When it comes to the economy, most people know when conditions are good or getting better, and when they're bad and getting worse. The latest opinion polls show it. A Quinnipiac University poll released October 22nd finds just 38% approval of Trump's handling of the economy as against 57% disapproval. Only 30% of independents approve. The approval figure is the lowest in Trump's second term. Other polls show that Trump's tariff policy, his stance on the government shutdown, and his popularity overall have high negative ratings. How could the figures be otherwise when government services are shut down, food assistance is in crisis, and health care costs are about to skyrocket? Though prices have cooled somewhat since their significant rise of nearly 3% in August, the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, which measures the cost of a broad basket of everyday goods and services, is on the verge of rising sharply again, led by the apparent end of health subsidies and the cost to households of tariffs, an extra $2,300 in 2025, according to the Yale Budget Lab. A mid-September CNBC survey of top money managers and professional economists showed that 68% of Americans think Trump's tariffs will put upward pressure on inflation, while 57% say the tariffs will result in higher unemployment and 54% see lower economic growth. Nearly half of all goods entering the United States, around $300 billion in value, are now subject to Trump's emergency tariffs. Even if the Supreme Court invalidates them, 19% of imports will still be subject to tariffs. Corporate leaders are very concerned. At the Yale Chief Executive Leadership Institute's CEO Forum, which brings together top political leaders and Fortune 500 CEOs, business leaders, as reported by Fortune magazine, quote, worry that Trump is undermining an economic system that took decades to build and has long benefited the U.S. more than any other country, under both Republican and Democratic administrations, all for short-term gains. They see what's happening as a hollowing out of U.S. economic foundations and institutions. While they approve of bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. and bolstering economic and national security, they fear for America's international standing amid the degradation of national security at the FBI, the CIA, and the Pentagon, unquote. An S&P Global report says that the major U.S. corporations have lost an estimated $907 billion because of the tariffs, with, quote, roughly two-thirds, or $592 billion, being passed on to consumers via higher prices. Trump's constant reversals of tariff rates, particularly with China, leave CEOs and everyone else flummoxed. People are not persuaded by his false claims that foreign firms, not U.S. importers and consumers, are hurt by tariff hikes. Small businesses are the most badly hurt by Trump's tariffs. Small businesses account for 97% of all imports. The notion that they can find alternative products manufactured domestically and at reasonable prices is nonsensical for most of them. No wonder small businesses brought the case against the tariffs to the Supreme Court. Fortune's writer reports, quote, eight major tariff adjustments in the past 12 months have created a policy whiplash that large corporations can navigate, but small businesses cannot. Yet these policies assume corporate-level resources that small businesses simply don't have, costing them $836,000 annually, while only 37% have access to business credit to weather these changes, unquote. At the state level, Moody's chief economist Mark Zandi reported in mid-October that 23 U.S. states, including Oregon, are in or on the verge of being in a recession. 12 states, including California and New York, are described as treading water, while 16 others, including Texas and Pennsylvania, have expanding economies. The bottom line, Donald Trump is in political trouble and he pretends not to notice. His golfing and destruction of the East Wing go on, and he says the economy needs no course correction. But Republicans in red states are the people most affected by the economic bad news. I'm Mel Gertoff of the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
Speaking of not caring, KBOO news poet Dan Raphael finds many of Trump's actions are truly inconceivable.
Donnie won the shutdown. He still doesn't care how hungry people get or how expensive their health care becomes. His health care is free and he needs plenty of it. Donnie says he's reduced the price of drugs 1,000%. Donnie thinks it's a national emergency, empowering him to increase tariffs when Canada shows a video of Ronald Reagan saying what a bad idea tariffs are. Donnie thinks it's an emergency any time he's told no. Donnie and Heggie like blowing things up, from alleged drug boats to alleged democracy. He took last weekend off as president, not as entrepreneur, trading favors for millions. It's not corruption, just capitalism, as usual. His stated reason for not attending the G20 summit is something that's not true. It's not Donnie's fault he got elected president twice, but whose fault isn't it? The fault lines in our political geology run further back than Reagan or Nixon. There's enough fault to go around, including everyone who voted for Donnie and any of us who say there's nothing we can do. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 12, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, Althea Billings, Dave Johnson, Mel Gertoff, Dan Raphael, and Hannah Francis. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Thanks Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez and Farah Siddiqui. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Byrne.
That's K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Today, we're talking about Street Root correspondent Jake Thomas's article, Banned and Abandoned. As the city begins to cite and arrest people living outside, advocates say the camping ban only makes life harder for Portlanders without shelter. Today, we are talking about Street Root's correspondent Jake Thomas's article, Banned and Abandoned. As the city begins to cite and arrest people for living outside, advocates say the camping ban only makes life harder for Portlanders without shelter. I have here with me Street Root's correspondent Jake Thomas. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure.